Welcome to this podcast from the Presbyterian Church in Ireland, exploring aspects of our life and witness at this time.
So welcome back to this podcast from the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. Thanks for joining us once again for another discussion. Last time out, we celebrated our 50th anniversary in the podcast. I'm not sure there was cake, but Neil Harrison hosted a brilliant conversation about renewing our vision for reaching out. And it's well worth a listen if you haven't had a chance to do that yet. I'd really recommend that after you've listened to today's episode, of course. So today we're continuing this theme of renew, really taking some time in the first few weeks of 2022 to consider some things that might be important to renew within ourselves and within our churches as well. We've already addressed renewing ourselves at the start of the year and then renewing outreach, as I've mentioned. But today we want to think about renewing our volunteers, those who serve within our congregations faithfully in their spare time, with heart and vision, perhaps for a particular area of ministry. I think when we consider those who lead as volunteers within our congregations, some of the normal patterns of serving have been disrupted, and some have struggled to perhaps even know how to serve as a result. And others are speaking about lethargy or tiredness in those who have already given a lot throughout the past couple of years. And in most congregations, I think it's fair to say there's been a turnover of leaders and those who serve. And in some places, we may even be struggling to re-engage some volunteers again in leading or serving within activities or programmes. So in the midst of all those challenges, my hope is that today's conversation will offer some hope as we consider how to encourage those who serve and volunteer in our churches, but also how we can motivate and draw others in to and share the burden of responsibility. Rachel Gamble is a discipleship worker in Sloane Street Presbyterian, and Paul Elliott is the clerk of session in Carmoney Presbyterian Church, and they both joined me for the chat, so enjoy the podcast. Okay, so Rachel, Paul, thanks for joining me today. I wonder, could you just tell our lovely listeners who you are and how you serve within your congregations?
Yeah, so I'm Rachel and I am part of Sloane Street Presbyterian Church in Lisburn, and I work there as the discipleship facilitator. So I sort of am involved in helping all kinds of people to become and to grow as and to make other disciples and help other people grow as disciples as well. And I do that kind of particularly with some of the children and the young people and the women.
Okay, and we'll maybe get on this later, but the whole discipleship facilitator maybe hints the fact that you're not doing it all, but you're helping other
Definitely
people. Is that
not.
Fair? Okay, right. Well, we'll dig into that later. Paul, why don't you do the same?
Yeah, I'm Paul. I'm clerk of session in Carmoney Presbyterian. I've been an elder for donkey's years, I think, and been involved prior to that in lots of kids and youth work in my sort of early teens, and that's a long time ago, of course, for someone like Rachel. But yes, and I'm now clerk of session and kind of working as we seek to find a new minister for Carmoney as well.
You're painting yourself as very old, Paul. You're definitely not that old. It's not donkey's years.
It's all relative, isn't it, Rick?
Yes, relative to me, maybe, yes, okay. Okay, well, listen, actually, even maybe before we get too deep into some of the issues we want to explore, I wonder, you know, it might be good just to hear a little about how you both ended up doing what you do in the life of your church, because we're thinking today about, you know, volunteer roles or leadership positions. So maybe, you know, Paul, if you maybe went first on that, but just what were some of the key things that brought you to where you are now? You've hinted at that a little bit, but I imagine someone doesn't set out with an ambition to be a clerk of session in their church. So what was your journey in serving that took you here?
Well, you're certainly quite right there. I didn't set out when I came to Carnmoney to be the clerk of session, that's for sure. But yeah, I've probably been in Carnmoney for well over 40 years when I kind of came with my family as a child. I became a Christian in my teens, mainly through Christian Endeavour in our church. And then subsequent to that, I then served in youth and kids ministries for quite a number of years as a leader initially in CE. I ran the Holiday Bible Club for quite a few years in our church, and then also in our Sunday Night Youth Fellowship for teens and younger adults. I then became a member of our Kirk Session in the early 90s, and back in sort of early mid-2000s, alongside John Dickinson, our previous minister, co-developed our kind of major strategy revamp for Carnmoney called 2020 Division back in 2008. And that really helped us to expand in terms of both the reach of our ministry in Carnmoney and bring in more people and teams, and kind of devolve many of the stuff that what we do from just purely a session-based stuff right out. And that work's been continued, of course, with Rick, who's one of our session members in Kernmoney too, as he has led the all-in strategy team to review it as we've reached 2020 and we're now 2 years into it. And I've been clerk of session for probably somewhere about 8 years maybe now in Kernmoney, really as a result probably of the strategy related work that we did. And also now at the moment, just obviously as we find a minister during this vacancy process. So that's how I kind of came to be where I am.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you just served in lots of different ways, kept serving, but your role kept changing, maybe. Is that fair?
Yeah, in many respects, yeah. Actually, it probably has. It doesn't really matter whether it's been sort of kids and youth ministry, which has always been a passion, being hauled in even by you, Rick, when you were our youth associate in Kernmoney, into events like Coast, which sort of reinvigorate you, particularly when you work with young people and young adults and really passionate believers. Yeah, so it is just serve in whatever way you can.
Brilliant. And there's a joy in that too, and hopefully we'll touch on that. Mm-hmm. Rachel, how does one become a discipleship facilitator?
It's a good question. I definitely, like, whenever I left school, I had absolutely no intention of being involved in anything, you know, more full-time in church. But really, it was kind of those volunteer opportunities, especially when I was a student, particularly at the beginning, being involved in PCI teams over the summer, and suddenly having these opportunities to serve in these ways that I hadn't before, and being involved in holiday Bible clubs and teaching, and realizing, oh, this is something I really love doing and something I want to do more of. And then really significantly going home after those weeks and being given opportunities in my church to say, okay, well, you know, if you think this is something you might want to do rather than just 1 week in the summer, what would it look like to do that for a whole year? What would it look like to teach some of the young people or be involved in running something for the kids? And through kind of those volunteer opportunities, then I realised actually this is what I want to do, and this is something that I think God's calling me to. And then after that, I was able to kind of find an opportunity to intern in Sloane Street. And then once I'd finished interning there, to stay on in this particular role.
It just shows the significance of someone, you know, identifying you or even asking you to do a role or a job. It's not just to do that task. Sure, it's not, it's you're actually maybe providing a pathway for them or encouragement as well. It's someone specifically saying, I think you can do this. So that sounds like it's been significant
definitely
for you in that. Okay, then in terms of just approaching sort of your own role in church now and how you serve, I mean, this has been a challenging season, trying not to mention the C word, but you know, what sort of mindset have you been trying to approach your role, you know, within the past couple of years, Rachel?
Yeah, I think trying to sort of be encouraged to do what is possible without being frustrated or annoyed, I guess, about what isn't possible. I think sometimes, especially at the beginning, it felt very sort of all or nothing, and it was, oh, if we can't do what we used to do, then, you know, do we just not do anything? But actually with each step and each maybe easing of restriction, thinking what's possible to do now, how can I reach out to people in whatever way is possible creatively and in a way that works? And so at the beginning of COVID, it might have been, well, we can't meet together with a youth group, but we can maybe do something on Zoom. Or with a particular person, might have been, well, we can't do what we used to do, but we can maybe go for a walk. And trying to just take small steps and do what was possible rather than being frustrated about all the things that weren't, I think has just been really helpful. And it's hopefully been helpful for volunteers as well, to know that even if maybe they can't do everything that they did before, just doing whatever is possible is hopefully helpful.
Paul, do you want to add to that in terms of your experience?
Yeah, I mean, I think also in connection with the fact that my role in particular is probably around, revolves around our Kirk session and kind of coordinating that. And also now that we're in a period of vacancy, having to try and coordinate some aspects of our church life as we've kind of come out of COVID. But I think there's a few things that kind of resonate with me in terms of that. I mean, I think for us, we've definitely found a real focus around prayer, actually, particularly as a Kirk session. We meet every Friday morning now on Zoom. We have been for probably nearly 2 years, actually, since the pandemic hit, actually, every Friday morning. And we have somewhere between 12 and 20 turning up every morning. And we have a prayer list for that. So that's been really encouraging. A number of our smaller members of session also have led some small groups, again on Zoom, in prayer, really praying for specific aspects. So like church life, vacancy, staff of our church, and really with that topic. And they have been praying regularly as well since that point in time. So we found a real unity around prayer, and much more so actually than we would previously have had, because we are gathering together. There's a fellowship aspect to it as well. There's a broad age range of session members who come on that every single week. And if they can't make it, you know, then they will always send a request in, and we the circulated list that we pray for every week, and members of the congregation know that. So that really has focused us very much so, and I think centered us. I think the other aspect for us is really clear communication at all stages. So when things hit, when we weren't sure what was happening, when we were waiting on guidance, when we were trying to decide on stuff, trying to, you know, really communicate clearly in simple steps and regularly to keep people informed, our session members, and then that's wider out to the organization. So we found that was really important. And now that we're obviously in, you know, the period of vacancy as well, the clarity of that communication when you can't always meet together is important. So for us, clear communications and not leaving any sort of vacuum for people to be uncertain. I think it's about bringing assurance and calmness to whatever's going on. And I think that's really important when you're in a leadership position. Whether you feel assured or calm yourself, actually, sometimes it may not necessarily be the case. I think there's also a recognition for me, as you know, people think I might know everything, which I don't. My wife regularly tells me I don't know everything, so that must be true. But I think there is a recognition that I don't know best in all the situations, and we'll maybe touch on a little later. There are other people in our congregation and in our wider fellowship who do better than me in certain areas, and making sure that we draw on them. So having the humility in my own perspective to recognize that it's not just me that should be deciding this, let's draw in people. And I think then finally for me, just it is generally making time for myself and my family, particularly with God as well. That's quite easy to get squeezed out in the busyness of all the stuff we do and all the last minute changes that we have to do. So that's a few thoughts from me, Rick.
Which is actually the fuel, really, to us as we serve as well. Yeah. So, yeah, no, it's great. Thanks for pointing that out. What are either of you noticing at this time, maybe about those who... So if that's almost about yourself, what are you noticing about those who regularly serve or served in the life of your congregation? Is there anything you've been just noticing or paying attention to? Either of you?
I think people's lives are really, really busy. I don't know if that's necessarily a new thing, but maybe sometimes when you stop or everything stops for a while and then it suddenly picks back up, it can feel quite overwhelming. There's just a lot of things going on for a lot of people. And some of that is quite overwhelming for them, that maybe actually it's all just kind of hitting at once, or there's been a lot of change, or the last 2 years have really taken a toll on people. And I guess it's recognizing that and not sort of steamrolling over people or expecting everything just to go back to the way it was before all of this change, not expecting things just to automatically snap back, but maybe taking time to listen to those things and understand that life is busy, and for some people life is really, really difficult at the minute, and we don't just want to use people for what we can get out of them in church, but we're part of a family and we care about those things.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've felt this, we've seen the same, you know, we even in our small home groups as well, sort of the busyness that parents, particularly working parents of kids who had to homeschool them, was huge, huge pressure on that during that period, and much more so, I think, than just the regular day-to-day life. So there's definitely that busyness, that maybe uncertainty around things too, about everything just keeps changing, or you don't know next week if your kid child's going to be off school, or if you're going to be actually put off because there's a COVID cluster or whatever it may be. So I suppose there was that uncertainty and busyness, which I think also led to some anxiety and stress. Actually, for some, we kind of noticed that too, that is a bigger factor for some. And I think that has also then led in Carnmoney, whenever some of our organizations have restarted, that there was a reticence for some to come back to serve. Combination of factors, I think there was a kind of a natural break, and probably people during COVID probably said, actually, I've served quite a few years doing X, Y, or Z, and therefore maybe now's the time I'm not going to come back. So I think there was probably an element of that. You know, I think the positives for that for us is that it's opened up new positions or new areas for people to step in. And we see maybe some younger leaders coming in to serve probably some key roles. You know, we see that in our, for example, in our company section in BB, you know, a very young leader, you know, in relative terms, has stepped in to do that. So I think that's opened up opportunities too, but definitely stressful. It's particularly stressful, we also noticed, for our youth and kids organization leaders now that they've restarted back. You know, the juggling of, will I have enough leaders every week? Because you're not sure whether your leaders will be pinged, have to be off because of that, rather than dealing with all of that and having to draw in. We even heard this morning in our actually elders prayer call from Claire, our GB captain, about the struggles, particularly starting back in January, about just the need for just every week is a bit of a challenge, just getting the leaders or pulling in volunteers who used to serve. And it's good to see their willingness, but I think that brings a level of anxiety in a busy church life, busy organisation like GB, BB. There's a lot of challenges there, but that just brings an extra level of burden and stress and maybe worry. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's actually struck me, Paul, just to listen to that as well, about maybe a greater flexibility or needing to have a great, we've obviously needed to have a greater flexibility, yeah. But maybe there's been an encouragement in that or a help in that because we've actually had to draw people in and say, you know, can you come and help for 2 weeks? But maybe that's drawn them in actually to serve again in a way that they haven't been before and as well. So I don't know if that's the case across the board, but just struck me there. You both carry a bit of a big picture, you know, Rachel in staff position, Paul as clerk of session. So you have a big picture perspective. So I'm wondering in what ways then, you know, you've named some of the challenges or some of the things you've been noticing. What ways have you been seeking to try to encourage others to serve or maybe enlist people to serve, you know, draw people into leadership, maybe encourage them, help support them, you know, any sort of practical examples of how you've been doing that either in Sloane Street or in Carnmalee?
I think we've tried to be sort of, or I've tried to be more thoughtful about how exactly people might serve. Sometimes we're guilty of saying, well, there's a person that needs a job and a job that needs a person, and so that person will just have to go there and that'll just be their area. But actually, it's really important to think about how specific people are gifted and what passions they have. And I'm actually almost encouraged by people who say, no, I don't think that's the area that I'm best equipped to serve in, but here is the area that I am. I don't think that that's what I can give the best of my time to, but this other area is. I think rather than people just feeling as though they're shoved into some sort of job that they're not quite equipped for, taking the time and allowing people to maybe explore a couple of different things and then say, here's the area where I know that I can serve and where I'm passionate about serving and where I'm actually using my gifts for good is really important. I think rather than people just feeling as if, well, they needed someone, so they got me, instead saying, oh, they actually needed me here.
And just to maybe unpack it further, is that you need to be personal for that though, because you're looking at mm-hmm. individuals' gifts, needs, time. So, you know, and then you're approaching people, is that right? Is that how you're going about
yeah.
that?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's definitely a longer process, and that's almost a challenge for me. Sometimes it's quicker to think, oh, I could just do this myself, or I could just get the person that I always get to do things because I know. But actually, when you take that little bit of extra time, and maybe give people a chance to try something out or let them have a go at something, then you realise this is somewhere that they have a really special gift, and this is something that's going to really benefit the church in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, it's like short asks and specific tasks have worked really well. That it's you're asking for initially a short commitment, whether that be, could you help out at a community event we're running, that which, for example, we ran just pre-Christmas for just serving tea and coffee, or for it was hot chocolate whilst people gathered outside type of stuff for an hour and a half. And you know, you've got a couple of families who said, we were really up to that, or we were supplying school uniforms for just over a dozen refugees, children who were in the area. And whenever our ministry coordinator for that stood up and said, we really need to, we don't have these shoes, could you actually, as a family or a group, just buy the shoes over Christmas and come back? We've got the shoe sizes and all of that. You know, the ask after church was satisfied within 3 minutes with people queuing to actually just want to. So it was a short, simple ask as well that was, can you help, or can you commit to doing something? You know, another one that has worked really well was something that Rick and the discipleship team worked on in our Sunday evenings, which was a 6-week course of discipleship, kind of related stuff. So Bible reading, sharing your faith, etc. And that was really good too, because that again was it's 6 weeks, you know, 1.5 hours on a Sunday night. Can you commit to that? So I think the short ask, specific tasks, definitely trying to widen the load in terms of the responsibilities of what people do. And by pulling them in at least and offering them the opportunity to either co-lead something, and then ultimately, you know, we can't do everything ourselves. I agree with you, Rachel. Sometimes it's so much easier to just I'll get that done in 10 minutes. But then there's not that many 10, there's not enough 10 minutes in the day to do everything, single thing. Really with the view that when you start some of these things, you need to be thinking who you actually hoping will take it on from you. You know, if you need to kick stuff off. So those were things that have maybe we've seen and we've sought to encourage. And I think that has worked well so far.
I'm definitely stealing that phrase, short asks and specific tasks. That's good, Paul. Oh,
Yeah, I thought you'd like that one, Rick, to be
yeah.
honest. But I mean, it is, I have copyrighted it already. You can't use it in your second book.
Oh dear. Okay. Well, listen, you know, maybe thinking about, and we hinted at this actually, Rachel, even in your job title, how do you think those in paid positions in church can take on that sort of mindset of facilitating or equipping everyone in the church to serve and take a lead? Because there can be a mentality, maybe in certainly in some churches or some contexts, someone comes in as a staff position or a paid position, then lots of volunteers say, well, that's my time up, you know, someone else can do it now. So what should the mindset be, do you think, in someone like a role like yours? Now maybe Paul will hear from you almost from the other side of that as well. So
yeah, I think you're right. It was a really kind of specific thing from the church when they made the rule in saying this isn't someone who's doing all of the discipleship work. That wouldn't even be possible for one person to do. But that they said this is someone who's coming in to help facilitate that. And so I think it's maybe in everything that we do, thinking about what is this going to look like for someone else to take it on after. So with maybe someone that I might read the Bible with or meet up with, it's thinking, well, in a certain amount of time, are you going to be able to do this with another person? Are you going to be able to take this on and run it? And for some other things, it means doing the things in the background that maybe allow other people to do that work of discipleship. If I can help someone by, you know, helping to set up some of the stuff or do a little bit of background or help them train or practice what they're going to be doing, maybe for a leader with the children, if I can help give them a little bit of guidance and then they can go and teach the children or disciple the children, same with young people, same with women in small groups, in discipleship groups, things like that. Every time we're sort of doing something, it's thinking, is this person then going to be able to go on and do that with more people who are then going to be able to go on and do it with more people? And you're right, Paul, I only have a certain amount of 10-minute slots in my day, but if each of those people can go on and do it with a couple of other people who can go on and do it with a couple of other people, suddenly it just multiplies out so much.
Yeah, so there's both a supporting, sort of adding value, resourcing people, but there's also this kind of training, equipping, encouraging as well.
Yeah,
very good. Okay, that's brilliant. Paul, do you want to add to that as someone who maybe is in a slightly different position in church?
Yeah, I think for us, I think it's important to listen to our paid staff, you know, and recognise that they have ideas rather than us trying to, I suppose, for us as a session, demand or suggest things. You know, I think obviously we can have ideas too, but so I think there's a listening aspect for staff that we need to understand where they're at, what their ideas are. There's definitely an encouragement factor in terms of encouraging them to sort of, if the idea is a good one or even if it's an uncertain one but they feel passionate about doing it, that we encourage them to try, expecting them that they may actually fail in something, but that's okay. You know, let's try it, let's push into that. There's definitely starting small and reaching certainly wider. So building a core group around you, things you've talked about, Rachel, you know, kind of was prepping for this. I was kind of reminded of the fact that Jesus started with a small group around him. And, you know, and ultimately that led to changing the world. So I think for us, you know, as a church, encouraging our staff members to basically build that small group around them, as you say, let that kind of start to multiply, but make it really specific, and then encouraging them with that, with what they do, be sort of very sensitive towards what they do. Sometimes it's a very lonely position as a staff member in a church, and sometimes it's probably not the most positive reaction you get all the time, because it's usually your failures sometimes that you're highlighted. And I think it's encouraging us as session and in the wider congregation to remember, look, it's really important to be positive about it too. Obviously there's honesty, but be positive, encouraging. And we definitely have seen it in Kern Money, you know, praying right all over around our staff. It's really important for not just the work they do in their paid position, actually for their whole life, for what's going on in their life and for their ability to have time, you know, alone as well. So I think it's those were kind of things that struck me.
Yeah. There's something almost distinctly Presbyterian in the sense of shared leadership. You know, this idea of we have a ethos of shared leadership, but actually then, and I wonder how that could echo across lots of different areas then of congregational life. So, you know, I'm imagining whether it's a staff person getting a little team of people or a volunteer leader saying, right, well, I'm getting other people around me to share the burden. And I wonder if that is one of the, I don't know, shortcomings maybe in past leadership models, that then people, and maybe even picking up Rachel on what you've said, coming back to after COVID, maybe lives are busy. We don't want, you know, some people don't want the burden of solo leadership, you know, on them. So I wonder if that is a way out or a model in some ways of saying, actually, let's gather people around us, whether it's a staff person gathering people around us or in a church saying, I wonder who's someone I can support, who's a leader that I could get around, you know. I don't know if you've any reflections on that you want to, either of you want to speak into or add to.
Yeah, I think it is a much more helpful, and even Paul, when you're saying about kind of amending things, that's something that we've done as well, even specifically with our youth group. We've changed the way that we meet and the way that our leadership works in that. So instead of it being such a rigid rota, and then suddenly you have people with lots of different things going on and the risk of people getting ill and not being there, and it feels very tight, to something that is a wider group of people who are there, but then with the acknowledgement that if something happens at the last minute and you're not able to come, or you're sick, or this happens, well, that's okay because everyone else is there to help cover that as well. And so that's just it seems to be a much better way to work at the minute, because it hopefully frees people up a little bit from that pressure of it's all on me, and if I don't make it tonight, the whole thing's going to fall apart.
Paul, I'm hanging up.
Yeah, I think for us, definitely having somebody else that you can kind of share it with, you know, whether that's a co-leader or somebody that you can bounce ideas off too, because it's when you're doing it on your own, it's quite lonely, and you don't always come up with the best ideas sometimes, or in discussion with others, not always like-minded with yourself. Actually, you kind of can generate sort of new ideas, but also be a good support staff. And I think you're right, Rachel. It definitely is about what is possible in these climates. And I think people have become accustomed more to that, rather than the, I suppose, demanding is maybe not the right word to use, but the expectation that these things will run like clockwork and X, Y, and Z will be done. I think people are, because of just the way things are with COVID and have been, and all the uncertainty, I think we're at least maybe more accepting that it's, if we could do a good job in some things, but not all things, or we can't offer all things, or there's an acceptance that, yeah, that's all that is possible. But also maybe it's also a recognition that, you know, I think people have in coming back maybe set priorities that are important to them, that they need, they've seen there's been a good, better element of balance in certain aspects, maybe with not having the busyness of everything in church life. And I think making sure that they protect that is important too. And I think that's important for our staff, actually. They're really important for our church staff, because I think if they're expected to shoulder even more of the burden and do more of the burden, their time with God's going to get squeezed out dramatically, and then they will not be effective. So I think that's another perspective too for us.
Yeah. Thanks so much for what you've shared today. It's been really loads of wisdom, and I'm sure it's helpful to people who are either serving in volunteer positions, or those who are trying to equip and draw others in. Before I finish, we ask every participant on the podcast to share a Bible verse or a passage that's been helpful to them recently, or perhaps that might fit with the theme of the episode. So Paul, I wonder, would you kick off, and then we'll give Rachel the last word.
Absolutely. One that's been on my heart, but it's been for about 3 years, and it did also was on my heart at the time COVID kicked in, still is Psalm 46 verse 10. Be still and know that I'm God. And the two words in it for me that really can resonate, and the one in particular was know and still. Obviously the stillness that comes from hopefully getting that level of assurance and being in his presence. But more and more in the past 6 months, it's been the word know. And I was kind of wondering why God was drawing me into know that I am God. And I think for me, it's keeping near and opening wide. So it's really the K-N-O-W. I kind of has kind of resonated with me, which is the keeping near Jesus, actually, which is about protecting my time. And I'm not good at it. Let's be really clear. I may say these things. I'm not perfect at this in any shape or form. But seeing the benefits of time and more time of being able to be with God, at least because you didn't have the busyness in that early first phase of COVID, was a reminder, which was, you need to keep near to me. I think Jesus is saying to me, you need to keep near to me, Paul. But I think also the opening wide is being receptive to him more and to what he's saying and speaking into me. So it's probably more a listening thing. So that's the verse that continues to resonate with me at different phases, but definitely that's it.
Yeah, well, I was at a conference last week, mentioned a bit before, and we spent a lot of time at that thinking about Romans 12, verse 1, which says, I appeal to you, brothers, in view of the mercy of God, or by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as living sacrifices. And I think what I realised is that anytime I'd ever really read that before, I skipped straight to the something to do and thought, okay, here's the job to do, to do this work, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, I've got to do this. And actually, something that was really helpful and that has really encouraged me since is just to stop and think about the mercies of God and think about all the things that he has done and is doing and will do for me, and realise that actually all of this service in volunteering or in working or in any aspect of life isn't trying to earn God's love, isn't trying to, you know, get him to love me or do more for me, but actually is a result of what he's already done and a result of the fact he has already loved us. And that's what's kept me going, really. And I think something that I hope to keep thinking about and keep spending time really focusing on, rather than jumping straight to what do I have to do? Because when we think of all those things, then suddenly we go, yeah, actually, I want to serve as a result.
Brilliant. What a great place to finish on. And certainly for anyone who's listening who does lead, serve in any way, those are two good reminders to remind us to be still and know who God is, and to remind ourselves of the mercies of God before we jump to what we do and to our activity, or even as we go about our activity as well. So thanks to you both for sharing today. I really appreciate it. It's been lovely insights. So thanks. So thanks to Rachel and Paul for sharing with us today on the podcast, and we hope you really enjoyed that. We'll be back in a couple of weeks' time with another episode. But today's episode actually coincides with this week's Refresh initiative organised by PCI. It's actually led by the moderator, and there's a series of four different digital events that are designed to come alongside and encourage and refresh and support various groupings of leadership within our denomination. So do pray for those who are involved in that. I think it's a little bit late, maybe by the time you're listening to this, to sign up to them. They're happening on the 1st and 2nd of February. But do pray for those events, but also more generally for those who take a lead within our congregations as well, who serve and volunteer in all sorts of ways. Also, if you're interested, there are a series of further upcoming events being organised, either to help equip and encourage and train up leaders in various aspects of church life, or even to gather different groups of people as well in some events that are coming later on this term. And you can find out more about these via the PCI website. That's presbyterianireland.org. But until next time, thanks for listening.
You've been listening to a podcast from the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. Thanks for joining us.